You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ian, look at this.
Well, it's a police box. What on earth is he doing here? Hey, these things are usually on the street. Feel it?
It's a faint vibration.
It's alive.
Earth Station Who, a fun mashup celebrating nearly 50 years of the Doctor Who universe. Hold tight. You never know where the TARDIS is going next.
Geronimo!
Doctor?
I am not a good man. I am not a bad man. I am not a hero. I'm definitely not a president. And no, I'm not an officer. You know what I am? I am an idiot with a box and a screwdriver.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station Who podcast. That's right, folks. This is the final. The final what you're talking about? The final episode of Earth Station Who before, get this, the Christmas special. That's right. It is right around the corner. Can you believe it? We've been talking about it. We've been drooling over it. And Doctor Who is here almost. As of this recording, it is the 5th of December, and we are talking all about the episode Father's Day. That's right. We're going back to the new series, this time the Ninth Doctor. And there's actually some Ninth Doctor stories we haven't actually reviewed here on the podcast. And Dr. Scott Vigay is joining us, and he came to us and said, I want to join you for one of my favorite episodes. And he mentioned a couple, and he said, we did that one. And then we said, and he said, how about Father's Day from the Ninth Doctor era? And I said, I don't think we've done that. And guess what? We have not. So we are talking all about it. And speaking of Dr. Vigay, we are here right now with Dr. Scott. Howdy, sir.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome to the show.
Oh, fantastic. You've redecorated.
Oh, yeah. We've new shade of blue, and, you know, we're getting ready for the new Doctor.
Right. Nice roundels.
Exactly. Awesome. We also put in a new blue light bulb. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So it gives it more atmosphere. So it's great to have you. And of course, we're joined by Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
How are you, my friend?
I'm great. You know, celebrate the holiday of Father's Day. It's the season, right?
Yeah.
Well,
every day is
Christmas.
Yeah. Oh, good. Good. I like that. I was about to say every day is a Father's Day in somewhere.
For you.
Well, you're a father of cats.
I am a father. Mothers of dragons and fathers of cats.
Exactly. You know.
And now that's a thing.
It is now officially a thing.
Yes.
He's the new Game of Thrones character. The father of cats.
Which means I have about 5 minutes until I'm executed quite painfully.
Exactly. Maybe the mother of dragons will come visit and you will become a meal. Maybe not. Okay. That one fell flat. Before we get going, Mary Ogle usually joins us, but sadly enough, she had to evacuate. The portion of California she lives in is being besieged by wildfire right now. And our thoughts go out to Mary, her family, and her friends. Hopefully they'll be safe and they won't have to go back to a disaster or such. It's crazy, you know. This is the time of the year for Santa Ana, so
she absolutely.
But it's good to know that she's safe, and as far as we know, her family's safe. And yes, there's she's just not able to Skype. So
exactly. So you know, she's kind of in between, but we'll talk to her for the Christmas special, and it'll be great to have us all together. So with that being said, we want to hear from you guys. Please write us eswpodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And of course, do it when you're nice and safe. You know, we don't want to hear you calling us and go, or, you know, I'm running from
nobody wants to hear that.
No, we're running from Daleks. Watch out. And you hear in the background, exterminate. Yeah, could be kind of fun, though.
As long as they're not being killed by a Christmas tree, then we'll be all right.
Ooh, exactly. Or reapers, like in this one, that we're going to be talking all about.
We could spend 45 minutes just talking about the reapers.
Oh, and I have a feeling that we shall. We shall. All right. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the Amazon.com tab right on ESOpodcast.com. That's right, folks. We can now shop to your heart's desire. Buy all the Doctor Who stuff you want to get. Go to Amazon.com through the ESO portal. And you know what? It doesn't cost you anything extra. And it helps bring a little sunshine into our lives. And we appreciate it, like we always say. All right, let's get started, though, with this week's rants and raves and finding out what's going on in the world of Doctor Who. All right, first off, big news for those, of course, who are going to be watching the Christmas special on Christmas Day. It is going to be shown in the UK. That's right, folks. First time it's going to be UK time, of course. It is going to be 5:30 p.m. in the UK on BBC One. Of course, what else would it be on? The time slot follows pattern of recent years, which sees Doctor Who as the anchor of BBC's Christmas evening entertainment. Overseas, that's us, the episode will be broadcast on BBC America and on Space on Christmas Day at 9 p.m. Eastern. And in Australia, to our friends there, because we do have listeners in Australia, and I like to say, good day, mate.
Say howdy.
Can you say it with an Australian accent, though?
Howdy. Bruce?
Of course, everyone's Bruce there. Or Sheila. December 26th at 7:30 p.m. it's going to be shown, because they're so far their time ahead. And, well, we don't even need to go there. Wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff. That's all we'll say. So good stuff with that. Some great pictures being shown of the First Doctor and the 12th Doctor reading the Doctor Who annual. It's kind of cute in the TARDIS. It's awesome that we are getting closer and closer to actually seeing the 13th Doctor for the first time in action. What do you think her first words are going to be?
Still not Ginger.
That's my thought also.
Yeah. Right?
Oh, yeah. What about you, Mikey?
I couldn't presume to guess.
Okay. That's what she's going to say. Got it. So, awesome. Definitely, you know, let's have a little contest. You know, if you guess properly and send us emails at eswpodcast@gmail.com, write us, let us know what her first words are going to be. And if you could do it by the 20th of December, we will pick on our Christmas special episode, the winner, and you get to sit in as a co-host for this podcast.
Ooh.
How's that nice. For a prize?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So let's do it. What is the 13th Doctor's first words going to be? And, you know, if you guess right, we will, like you said, you will be co-host for an episode. They've been saying for Doctor Who, new film look for series 11, it'll be more cinema feel to it, more, you know, I guess colors and more lush feel and more, you know, what do they call it? Cinematography.
Mm-hmm. They're swapping out the lenses and new cameras to try to give it that theatrical feel.
That's what I was going for. That was the word. See, this is why you're a doctor. You know, you come up with the big words, not like us, just who have regular BAs in the room.
Well, I think it's going to be cool. I mean, Doctor Who is always the flagship show, so they were one of the first to go high def. So that's kind of nice that they're getting a chance to do these new cameras and new lenses, and it shows that they're not just doing one more season of Who, they're actually investing in it.
Wouldn't it be cool if they were filming for 4K?
That'd be cool. Mm-hmm.
That would be pretty awesome.
It would be great for like the 10 people that have 4K TVs.
Hey, that was sitting under my Hanukkah bush. It's okay.
Oh, awesome.
Yes. So, no, or as I like to call it, the pre-Black Friday sales. So, but yeah, there's plenty of cool stuff going on. And Mikey, you also had some Doctor Who news.
Well, you know, it's a little thing, but I think something that I wanted to make note of because she doesn't get enough credit. But I noticed that late in November, it was announced that Delia Derbyshire, person who, I don't know if you can say she co-wrote the Doctor Who theme, but she certainly was not credited with anything as far as the Doctor Who theme. But yet we know that she was. She created the Doctor Who theme from the written score by Ron Grainier. She was actually given an honorary PhD, posthumously, of course, by Coventry University. So,
fantastic.
So she was awarded with the honor from her hometown. She was born there in 1937, and there it's nice that they're very proud of her. Again, it would be nice if May of this year would have marked her 80th birthday. Would have been kind of nice if she had been more recognized. But I think most Doctor Who fans recognize her name. It's just unfortunate that, you know, whenever the Doctor Who theme is credited, her name is not there. You know, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, unless you buy one of the soundtrack albums, then they put it in a small little asterisk. You know, it's like, you know, who are the people that actually created Batman? It's more than just Bob Kane. It's the other individuals who contributed to that and, you know, stuff like that. So unfortunately that's the industry, I think.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, so someone takes the spotlight and all these other people actually put their fingers into it and got their hands dirty. And a lot of them did a lot of work for it and none of them got credit. And she was one of them. Mm-hmm.
Are you guys excited about the Series 9 and Series 10 soundtracks that have just been announced?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I am very excited about that. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, which tracks they have on it and, you know, how they get it. And, you know, I'm going to love every second of it, though, because Murray Gold is awesome.
And it's his last contribution, really, this Christmas special, right? So that's another big change. I mean, his music, if you think about talking about the arrangement of the Doctor Who theme, when the series came back in 2005 and you heard the theme for the first time, I mean, wow, what an impact, right? And then can you imagine what it's been like for the past 10 years, every so often having to go back and hit lightning in a bottle again? You know, at some point that's got to get, you know, on your nerves, going like, you know, how many times can I go back to the well? So it's amazing that he's stuck with it this long and provided that continuity from all the modern doctors.
No, exactly. So it's very awesome and it's going to be neat to hear. And he always puts out a good product.
Yeah.
So very awesome. Another little bit of Doctor Who actually merchandise that you might want to pick up. I don't know if you guys are all familiar with the Doctor Men at all.
No, what's that?
Doctor Men was a series of kids' book published by Puffin Books, based on Roger Hargrave's colorful characters, but they're all Doctor Who. They didn't get the licensing to it, but they call them Doctor First, Doctor Fourth, Doctor 11th, and Doctor 12th.
Okay.
And they're like shapes, though, and with. Like the first doctor was wearing, Dr. First is wearing a monocle, has white hair, and has a cane. Dr. Four is orange, but he has a multicolored scarf and a floppy brown hat and curly hair.
That works.
Dr. 11 is wearing a bow tie and a fez. And of course, Dr. 12 has sunglasses and white spiky hair.
Okay.
So it's pretty awesome. Well, they're coming out with vinyl figures of them now.
Oh, cool.
So I'm going to actually, if you go to our Facebook group, it is set up there and you could see the images of it. And we will have a link on our Amazon through our Amazon site to them also. So it should be actually really awesome. So it's pretty cool. And, you know, we're all getting ready for it. And, of course, the full season of season 10 is now available in Blu-ray and DVD. And you can pick that up also through Amazon. Just giving you guys hints for holiday shopping and stuff. And, you know, if anyone wants to get it for your favorite Doctor Who host, you know, hey, it would be great. You know, I wouldn't say no. But, you know, and if you at least you order through the Amazon store, that's as big of a gift as actually receiving it. So what can I say? So definitely worth it. It's interesting, though, because the season does not come with either of the Christmas specials. It doesn't have the Husbands of River Song. Actually, no, it was last season was Dr. Mysterio.
Right.
And
so where do you get those then? I guess in the previous season?
No, Dr. Mysterio was sold separately.
Oh.
And they're going to obviously sell this one as a separate disc too.
See, that's how they get you.
They've been doing that pretty regularly since the Matt Smith regeneration episode. Because I was like looking through it and I was like, wait a minute, that's not on there. And neither was the Santa Claus one and neither, you know, so...
Yeah.
So it was interesting to see. So it's going to be a lot of fun to pick up, you know, this story when it comes out. Because after this, we're not getting new Doctor Who till next fall. So,
yeah.
So we can watch the Christmas special over and over and over again.
Put it in a cycle with the 50th anniversary special.
Ooh, that could be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Because I hear the Christmas special ties into the 50th anniversary. So, ha.
It's almost as if they planned it.
Not that I know anything and said spoilers or anything. So, hey, what the heck? So, with that being said, I think we're rambling. Let's take a quick break and we'll
Hold up.
What?
You can't do rants and raves without saying the most important Doctor Who news in years.
Oh, that one. You mean the extra material for Shada you're talking about?
Tom Baker returns in the role of Doctor Who. That's how he calls it. To use his phrase, not mine. Yes, this first time in what, 30 some years? Since 1981, he hasn't played the Doctor. And he got on his old outfit. They had a set that was designed like his old TARDIS. They even got a guy to do the lighting that was actually worked on Doctor Who in the 70s and 80s. They shot it with 1979 tube cameras.
Awesome.
They shot it on a television studio as opposed to a film stage. They tried to recreate it as much as possible to give it that same sort of, you know, 1980s, 1970s Tom Baker feel to it. I'm excited, you know, for all our talk about Shada and this new edition of it, with it being animated, to be honest, I was kind of like, well, okay, that's nice. I mean, that's great, but I've already read it. I've already seen it. I've already heard it. I've already, you know, like what else can they possibly do to make this exciting? And then boom, like they announced that Tom Baker and the image of him as you know, in the whole scarf and setup and everything looking like just basically like he did back then. I mean, the TARDIS circles even have like dust and grime on them. Like
they have a nice patina on them. It's really kind of cool.
They look like they're about 20 years old.
And it's awesome. The set wobbles and everything just like it used to.
Yeah. And, you know, this is apparently from Douglas Adams' original script. He had a sequence in which the fourth Doctor, older, speculates, you know, something to the effect of sometime in the future, someone will meet me and say, is that really the Doctor? He seemed like such a nice old man. And I'm just imagining Tom saying this and it's just making me giddy. So as a Tom Baker fan, I am super excited to see him back in this role, you know, especially... You know, I know he's been doing a lot of work for Big Finish, and I'm not diminishing that at all. And, of course, when he appeared as a curator, that was pretty awesome. But this is, you know, for a guy who basically kind of swore off Doctor Who for a long time, this is just the it's coming full circle for him, right? And I'm just absolutely. So glad he's still around, that we can enjoy him and get this done, get Shada finally finished in a way that I think it, as much as it can be. So this should be it. This should be the definitive boom, done, no more Shada.
Well, until they do some sort of digital re-enhancement with a fourth Doctor and take the audio track and all of a sudden it's like Princess Leia and Grand Moff Tarkin, you know, in another 30 years.
No. The BBC will never have that kind of budget.
Especially not for Doctor Who.
Well, it might, okay. So are you saying?
At least not in our lifetime.
Right. Well, I thought you guys were going to talk about the possible spoiler that was on Facebook yesterday.
I'm not talking about spoilers. We don't talk about spoilers.
No spoilers. Okay. No spoilers.
Okay.
Nope, no problem.
So no spoilers for the new season or the Christmas special. I do not wish to know.
Okay.
Nope.
So you can message Scott privately if you want to talk to him about the spoiler.
And he will talk to you. Trust us. We know. It is awesome, though, because, you know, there's a lot of great stuff coming out. You know, some people have seen this episode already of Doctor Who, so they already know. But, you know, like we said, we'd love to hear from you guys. Please. This is a great contest for us to have. And you can be up here on the station, too, if you can guess what the 13th Doctor's first words are going to be. And, you know, if you get it right. And get it to us by the 20th of December. We want to definitely hear from you. ESWpodcast@gmail.com. All right. Now we are going to take a break, unless Mike has something else he wants to talk about.
No, I'm ready to talk about Father's Day.
All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment.
In a world where podcasters talk about the same old pop culture topics, two heroes must rise to bring forth a new era of podcast entertainment. The Cigar Nerds Podcast. Movie reviews, pop culture debates, news, science, and even beer reviews. We're stranger than Stranger Things and funnier than an evil sewer clown. CigarNerdPodcast.com. We all smoke down here, Georgie.
We are going back over 10 years ago now, folks. That's right. Going back to May 14th, 2005, when Rose Tyler finally got to meet her daddy. And we are going to Father's Day. And it's Ninth Doctor, Chris Eccleston, Billy Piper as Rose. And it introduced us to Pete Tyler. And we got to spend most of this episode in a church.
Baby Rose. And of course, it could be subtitled this, you know, Father's Day or when Doctor Who got Rickrolled.
Ooh, so very true. Oh, God. You had to remind me about that part. It was interesting. I remember seeing this originally and the concept was awesome. You know, trying to go back to see, you know, when a loved one passed away, and especially something so traumatic for Rose because she was a baby and, you know, her father died alone, hit by a car, and that was a hit and run. So it was just interesting. And sometimes when you meet the people who are no longer with you, people around you build them up after they're gone to be something that they're not. And when you actually meet them, you get to actually see the real them. It's very interesting. What are your guys' thoughts?
Well, I chose this one because I thought that it was a great character piece for not only the Doctor, but also Rose. And it was one of the first times where time travel was a significant part of the story. You know, we've had hints that the Time Lords are gone. You know, he's the last of his kind. What does that mean? What was going on with the Time War? And what I loved about it is something as usually as trivial as a time anomaly or something along those lines would have been taken care of by the Time Lords. And now we get to see what happens when they're not there. I thought that was a great way to show the weight of the decision. And honestly, you know, it's one of those things where the Doctor gets angry at Rose for putting him in this situation where she, you know, deliberately picks a point where the temptation to save her father would be so great. But at the same time, he should have known that this was the likely outcome. I mean, of all the people. And as he says, you know, I've done it again. I've chosen another stupid ape. But that says more about him than it does Rose, I think.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah. And I think that it was a really good episode to kind of show you the battle-worn Doctor and just out of the, you know, and the temptation that the TARDIS could be and all that. And I thought that using the Reapers, I mean, it was cool, but now the question is, now that they introduced them, how come they never show up ever again? You know, the continuity gene in me, you know, wishes that they would somehow be able to use them, but unfortunately, it's just way too complicated. In fact, at one point, I think in one of the early drafts, they weren't going to have them at all, but they decided that they needed a monster to kind of spruce up the script a little bit. So I think it worked for here, but it wasn't something that they could do that regularly without causing other problems, I think. But I thought that, like you said, it was a really good episode to show something that everybody could relate to. Not everyone has lost a loved one in this way, but everyone can understand wanting to go back and make a change. So it was a great way to tell that story.
I think it's the first time that, and maybe ever, I'm trying to think like, well, not, they've done it since then, but the first time, because I don't remember there's too many instances of this in classic Who, but certainly in the new Who, I think it's the first time that a companion, they go someplace that's really personal to the companion.
Yeah.
And it's a really personal request. It's a personal thing. There's no ulterior motive here. There's no, you know, the Earth is not in danger.
There's one episode that I can think of, but I don't think it qualifies. And in the same way,
no.
The episode I'm thinking of is Ghost Light.
That's exactly where I was going to.
Look, I try to put that out of my mind. Like, look, I respect you guys both. I wish you could respect my wishes as well. So, like, I can't believe you guys just both did me that way.
Sorry.
But I get what you're saying. But yes, yeah. You're right. It's a different kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a different kind. The Doctor did that too. Ace for her own good, as opposed to this. I mean, this is the first time. Well, I mean, you know, the companions have more agency when it comes to the new series anyway.
Well, this is a prime example. I mean, a lot of people like don't like that, especially a lot of classic Who fans, but it is a you know, it is what it is as far as the new series goes, and this is the first, you know, huge example of that, where the companion pretty much, you know, requests where to go. They go, despite the Doctor's warning,
right?
Because he, you know, he's like, you're not going to be able to handle this, and she can't, and yes, he's mad, but yes, like as you said, as you hinted, Scott, he's mad at her, but he's also mad at himself. This is why he doesn't do this, right? Like,
right.
And plus, we just recently learned, I think, right, that he can't go back and change thing, people that he's lost.
Right.
His whole, you know, speaking of the Time Lords, his whole planet is gone. Because don't we find that out in Dalek?
Yes. I think so. There's references. Yeah.
Yeah. That was before this.
Right. That's right before this. We just found out what happened, like what his story is, the fact that he's the last, da 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 da, you know. And sure, he would love to go back and change things. So even though the Reapers look, you know, kind of, yeah, they're kind of problematic. There has to be obviously some repercussions for what they're doing. So I just look at them in this case as a manifestation of those repercussions in this in this instance. It would be nice if, yes, they were referred to again, because they were such like a big thing about this episode. And this is such a powerfully written episode, an emotional episode that Paul Cornell wrote. And credit to him, too. I think this is his first actual script writing for the show.
But he had done.
Oh yeah,
other
he had done like a lot of like books and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Right, so, the new adventures, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he had written already Family of Blood by this point. Right.
Yeah. So, and you know, great things to come. So, you know, and it's perfect for this. I mean, this is a great story.
meeting Rose's dad and baby Rose too.
No, but I think what Mike was saying about meeting people and realizing there's family lore and then there's the real person. Yeah. I think that that is a good part of the heart of this episode too, because what's great about it, I think that the line that sticks out to me is like, I'm your dad. It's my job to take, to take this for you, something along those lines. And it's really great because Pete realizes, okay, look, I might not be able to make it rich. All these other schemes have failed. All these other things are bad. I'm not supposed to have lived long enough for you to know me, but I can at least do this. And that is a fantastic character moment for him. I think it redeems a lot of him a lot, because before that, he's sort of a lost soul. And this gives him focus.
Mm-hmm. Well, very much so. And it's interesting because, we get to meet Pete later again from the other Earth in the next season. But this Pete is, like you said, a lost soul. He's trying to find himself. He's coming up with all these harebrained ideas. And it's interesting because before this point, Jackie, whenever she talked about Rose's dad, was St. Pete this, St. Pete that. Yeah. He was awesome. Yeah. But then you actually got to see what the two of them were actually like together. And yeah. I actually got to see that in person, with my mom and dad. When my mom passed away, my dad, put her up on her memory up on a pedestal.
Yeah.
And everything.
I think it's a very human thing to do because it's easier.
Oh, right? Yeah, of course.
It's a natural phenomenon that happens. I mean, I don't think anyone goes out of their way to say that I'm going to forget everything and I'm going to distort their memory. But it's actually to make you have peace with the fact that they're not there. And it's this really natural thing that happens. And again, it's another reason why the writing is so powerful and so relatable.
And Billy does a really good job in this. I mean, I don't think in that first season, sometimes she gets enough credit. Sometimes in her old run of Doctor Who, because certainly after this, it becomes, there's a lot of people who just, don't like what her character becomes. But yes, including you. Yes, see, if you can mention Ghostlight, like I can go here. So, I think this was the first time. Through the series, I mean, we're on episode 8 and we're seeing her okay, but she's pretty much just going like, hey, that's really cool. What's this? She's serving the role of the companion, right?
Right.
But in this, she just really has a lot of emotion going on. The scenes between her and her dad, I mean, we can all connect with. This is where having a companion who's like an everyday kind of person that we can all relate to really, like, it's episodes like this that really stand out.
I think for me, this is the episode that warrants her having a family that they kept coming back to.
Oh, yes. Good point.
No disrespect to the character of Jackie or to Mickey. But honestly, my initial reaction way back in the day was that they were, kind of lead weights around her neck. Why do we need this? Why is every third episode back in modern day? Well, it's obviously cheaper and there's a bunch of budgetary reasons, but honestly, it was I didn't see the value in it. Most companions classically would enter the TARDIS and never come back, and nobody cared. But it was a nice way to kind of go, well, yeah, but this is the modern era. People would notice if you're gone, and stuff like that. And they played with that too eventually. But this is the episode where her family actually mattered, and I think that it really paid off.
Well, it's interesting because, as many of you at home know, Rose is not my favorite character, but there's a big difference between Rose with the Ninth Doctor and Rose with the Tenth Doctor.
Yep.
And
so you don't agree with the Ninth Doctor that she's a stupid ape?
Oh, she is a stupid ape, but I do completely agree with that. But I think she was a great character in the first season of Doctor Who, and then they made her into a lovesick puppy, basically. And so I just was like, yeah, I'm pretty much done with her after the Ninth Doctor was over. And I liked her a lot through these, and I liked her character in this. I thought the scenes when she just watched him die the first time, and then they go back a second time, and then she saves him. I love how she runs right past themselves and causes mm-hmm. the time paradox right there and saves Pete. And it's just awesome. And then the scenes with the car constantly going through the time warp right there and repeating right. itself. It was just awesome. And there was just so much to this that was great. And I cannot, and I emphasize on cannot, and say how much I liked Eccleston as the Doctor in this story.
Oh, agreed. In fact, I don't think he gets enough credit. I mean, everybody loves David Tennant, or most everybody, and you know, people can usually come around to whether or not they like every Doctor after that. But I think Eccleston got a bit of a raw deal. You know, once it was announced on what episode one that he was leaving by the end of the season, I think some people kind of wrote him off or disengaged. And going back and looking at his episodes now, you're like, wow, this was actually really good, and I miss him more, you know. And at the very end, when he says, you know, you were fantastic, and so was I. I mean, yeah, he was. And this episode and many others really show how strong of an actor he was.
I think that's another case, much like what happened with Billy and Rose's character later on. I think that's another case of, because of Chris's attitude towards Doctor Who and all that since yeah. then, I think that's tainted his run on yeah. Doctor Who, because at the time, you're right, it was huge. I mean, this was the Doctor we all wanted. We didn't know we wanted, but we did. Yeah. And we liked him. I mean, he was full of angst. He was full of sorrow, although we had no idea why. He was full of regret, but he was still excitable. He was still interested, curious, everything that you want the Doctor to be. He played it all up to the hilt. And one moment he could be chewing you out. The next minute he could be embracing you and wanting, you know, to save your life and everything. He was able to carry that off. I think because of what Rose became and because of Chris afterwards, this era of Doctor Who gets looked at like, yeah, well, I mean, I've even heard people say you can skip it, although it's amazing to me.
Oh, hell no. David, no, no, no,
when
no,
David
no.
was announced, when we saw like that end, and it, you know, he reincarnated into, generated into David. I mean, a lot of people, I know people who left, like stopped watching because they liked Chris so much, and they were like, I can't watch anymore because I liked Chris a lot. So
yeah, you know, welcome to Doctor Who. It happens, right?
Oh, no. Exactly. And that's the thing. When people say, oh, you could skip this season, don't skip the season. I was telling Mike, we were talking off the air last night when we were getting ready for, you know, talking about, oh, are you ready to talk about Father's Day? I was telling him, you know, I was watching this Saturday afternoon and I was like, I liked it so much. And then I saw the next coming for the next episode, which is basically the Doctor dances and the empty child.
Right. And how do you not love those two episodes?
Exactly. And then, yeah, right. And then, okay. Then from there they go to Boomtown. And then from there they go to the final two with the game show episode and then the Daleks return.
If you take Father's Day and then the next two parters together, those three episodes, he goes from, I've done it again, I picked another dumb, stupid ape, to just this once rose, everybody lives. I mean, yeah. Talk about the pendulum of experience. And and that the thing you were saying, Mike, about all the characteristics of the Ninth Doctor, the thing that you're absolutely right, you hit the nail right on the head. He was all those things. But more importantly, he could be brooding, but not in a David Boreanaz CW hero kind of way. No, you know what I mean? Somehow everybody else seems to kind of like lose sight of what that is. And Christopher Eccleston's take on the character, and coupled by the writing and all the other things that were going on with the production of those episodes, it wasn't a dark, depressing, I can't relate to you or engage with you, Doctor. You know, and that's the other thing, too, is that there's been all this talk about how, you know, they want to experiment with the Doctor being more alien, less alien, that sort of thing. The Sixth Doctor, the 12th Doctor, you know, that sort of those arguments. And there's a good chance that they could have said the same thing about Christopher Eccleston. But in some way, maybe it's, you know, you've known soldiers who have come back from war. Maybe it's other things. You know, you you could get past all that and you could see the humanity in his performance still. And he was still somebody that you wanted to root for. And these three episodes, Father's Day, and then then all of a sudden he's the U-boat captain. It's really, really, really good, I think.
I agree somewhat. I do think that Chris was able to tap into something that I personally hadn't seen from a doctor that played the actor since Tom.
Yeah.
Because he seemed to embody this sort of distant, weird, like, he kind of is the smartest guy in the room, but he's also the weirdest guy in the room. Like,
yep.
there's something about, and two, you know, and much in the same way off screen, Chris is a very odd man. Like, he's just, yeah. He's sort of like, you know, if it were just to come out tomorrow that he was an alien, I think people would just be like, yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Right. Oh, very much so. Yeah. But you could totally see, right. You could totally see the post-traumatic stress syndrome that he was facing, yeah, from after, you know, the war, and yeah, the anger, the fit, going from being happy-go-lucky to being completely angry and intense, yeah, and just on a snap of a fingers. And like they said, it was Rose who healed him.
Yeah. And so that's why, you know, we were going through the list, and you know, ESW has been very prolific. You've gone through a ton of episodes. Yeah. And so it was a little hard to come down on what to talk about tonight, but you're like, okay. And I'll joke a little bit. You know, I was talking to somebody at Dragon Con, and we were talking about episodes, and there was actually somebody dressed up as the little boy with the gas mask. And someone said, oh, I don't recognize that one. And his friend said, oh, that's from classic Doctor Who. And, yeah, time has passed us, my friends. Well, this is now considered classic Doctor Who.
Well, yeah, well, it's 12 years old already, you know?
Yeah.
If you think about it, 2005, that's over a decade old.
Yeah.
God, we're getting old, folks.
I appreciate, you know, obviously as you know, we mentioned, and it's weird for me that this is not a Stephen Moffat episode, because as Scott mentioned, it is one of the few episodes, the few stories about Doctor Who that is time travel related. You would think that a show that has time travel, like, as its basis of being, would be more about time travel, but really, it's just an excuse to get him and his companion here and there. It isn't until the new series where we see this episode, and then later when Stephen Moffat, his episodes, where we really see them play around with time travel. And
yeah,
this was the first time, like, I mean, in the classic, I'm going to mention Tom Baker again, but I know we have the scene where, you know, he has the opportunity to kill the Daleks, to wipe him out. And
sure.
So that's a big time moment. But before Father's Day, correct me if I'm wrong, and don't mention Ghostlight, but correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't recall a moment like Doctor Who never had a punch in the gut time travel moment like City on the Edge of Forever for Star Trek.
No, nothing like that.
Like, this is a punch in the gut, like letting Edith Keeler die. Like, this right. is like, but instead of being a, you know, famous figure that has to go because she's going to affect history, this is just some guy. Like, this is an ordinary guy who does, like, you know, is not perfect by any means. Certainly, if he was to live, it's not going to change the world, yet it does have ramifications.
Right. It does even worse. You know, it will tear the universe apart if he lives. That's
right. Do you think that, because Rose is his daughter, and if he was to live, that would totally change her, and because we know what she goes on to be as far as Doctor Who, you know, and as far as her relationship with the Doctor and everything like that, and everything to come, being a companion of the Doctor, do you think that in and of itself is what his contribution is?
Well, I think that's a great Marvel New Prize, but what's wonderful, what's wonderful about it is that, you know, the message of Doctor Who has always been, you can be fantastic. You know, he takes companions who appear to be everyday ordinary people, and shows, you know, the potential inside of them. So I think that it goes along with the overall message of the show that look what that, the importance of one life.
Well, it does seem like that's been the case of New Who. That wasn't the case of Classic Who.
Right.
So Classic Who did a few, did that quite often, but then they would do, you know, they'd have, and they, you know, we had Romana too. We had Leela. We had people that were not, we could not, I mean, we could relate to them in some extent, but not to the extent that we could just anybody off the street. But
right. No, but I agree that that's definitely a new series, kind of mantra.
The, I also have to mention, since we're talking about performances and everything, the introduction of Sean Dingwall as Pete Tyler was so good that we just needed to see him again. So when he shows up again in the Cyberman story, and then later on, of course, with the big, the big finale that we just reviewed a couple of months ago, like it's a welcome appearance. We're like, oh, we like this guy because he was so good in this. Mm-hmm.
Doomsday and Army of Ghosts.
Yeah, yeah, and I think those are the. I don't think he appears in maybe a cameo here and there, but I certainly they cast him well.
I don't think he appeared in the season finale they did with the 10th Doctor and Donna. It was Jackie, Mickey, and Rose from that planet.
No, he doesn't show up there. No.
No, I don't think so.
No, but you know, it would be cool to see Pete and Brian, right? Rory's dad, be companions to the Doctor. That would be cool.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I would agree that Pete Tyler is cool enough to be like companion cool, but yeah, he was cool. Like, when we see him again, granted, he's a very different Pete Tyler.
Right.
He's an entrepreneur that's actually successful, to a degree. But he only causes the downfall of man for that existent planet. So, Oops. Maybe that's why he needs to be killed in this one. You know? So that could be the ramifications as well. So that's a case could be made for that.
Well, it's interesting, though, with the story, because I was reading and originally the plot was the Grim Reaper was trying to come for Pete and was taking people that weren't. It wasn't their time. But it was trying to grab, you know, try to get to Pete, and whoever was in the way of the Grim Reaper, it took. And hence, that's where the Reapers came from.
Yeah, but yeah, I read that as well. And, you know, to be honest, we had just listened to that story where, the Master, where the Doctor meets and encounters death. And that would have been something similar here. And I just am not comfortable with that sort of that interaction that the Doctor and Death have. I'm glad they went the monster route, actually.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the only Doctor that you start doing the, you know, gods from beyond time type of stuff. And that's sort of a Seventh Doctor final season kind of trope. And I don't think it gets you much by doing that, because if you introduce them, it's kind of, like, well, then why aren't they interact? You know, if they're, you know, why aren't they taking the place of the Time Lords or some other question like that? I guess I like the idea that they're just this natural phenomenon that happens when things go awry.
Yeah, and maybe, like, have we had an instance where things went awry to the point where we would see them again? I guess we have.
Not yet.
You know. The universe,
like, like Scott, you said that you would like to see them again, but when would they appear?
Pandora exploding and causing the Big Bang 2 and, you know, and all that. Yeah, the crack in the wall.
Okay, I could kind of see that.
Yeah, I mean, after all, the entire universe was recreated by Amy's memories. I mean, how...
Then there's your answer. When the universe was recreated, there was minus Reapers.
Yeah, she didn't know them.
We're not even going to go there.
I'm going for another no prize.
Exactly. Now, it was interesting because the Reapers, yeah, there's been different instances in the new series since where they could have come. They could have come literally in the 50th anniversary special.
Yeah,
well, I know it's going to happen. I know that, you know, once people listen to this, they're going to like give me a whole bunch of instances where it could have happened. So So I know that, like Nicole and Nathan and a bunch of people are going to call me out on this.
He looks forward to your letters.
Mm-hmm. I do. Yes. Or it gives us something to talk about. Like, look,
exactly.
Me spouting off the mouth gives us something, people to talk about in the Facebook group.
Well, if you think about it this way, you know, anytime you see Mike at a Doctor Who convention, just go up and talk to him about all the time the Reaper should have shown up. He would love it.
Just come up and just tell me all the times I'm wrong.
Exactly.
It's not something that I do on a daily basis. Obviously, it is. So, I don't get that enough in my life.
Exactly. It's just called work, in other words.
It's just called my normal day.
So, yeah, I totally understand that. It was good. Did you guys like how they portrayed Jackie as such a biatch?
Yeah, I thought it was consistent. I wasn't surprised by it. I was a little bit surprised by young Mickey, the whole imprinting thing. That was kind of cool, where that it kind of came out of nowhere. But as far as her mom, I don't know. I wasn't surprised by it.
Okay.
Yeah, because we don't really get like an understandable feeling for Jackie until the season after this. I would say until what's that one that Mary suggested when she first joined?
Oh, Love and Monsters.
Love and Monsters. Well, that's a pretty big Jackie episode. I think we start to feel for her in that one. Is when we start, I think, if I'm not mistaken. I know. People don't. We're talking about a lot of bad Doctor Who now.
We brought up a lot
of sore points. In talking about this really classic episode, we mentioned a lot of sore points.
Well, that was, truthfully, though, you were right, because that is a Dr. Light episode, and Jackie is featured very prominently in it with Elton.
Yeah, and that's the one we kind of feel like. I mean, that's the one where they kind of show how hard it is on her, with her being, with Rose being gone, and she's the only thing that she has left of her husband and her family, and you know, she's off doing God knows what, and she's lonely, and yeah, I mean, you start to feel sorry for her. And I must admit, while I was watching these episodes at the time, I didn't have a great regard for Camille, and I apologize for that, because since then, I you know, after watching her her body of work and then meeting her at Hulanta last year, I realized that she is, you know, so I need to give her more credit than that.
Oh, she's a wonderful ambassador for the program. I mean, the actress talking about her experiences, you could tell it really meant a lot to her. You know, I think that's the difference, is the character she was asked to play versus the actor and how they related to the material. You know,
and she is deceptively clever.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I think, you know, it was interesting. I liked the different versions of some of the major characters to see. And Rose being put in, meeting somebody she had idolized all her life, and finding that he's just a person. And that's was great. I definitely recommend this one. Any last thoughts before we go ahead and rate?
No. Just wish I had more Christopher Eccleston episodes to see.
Well... Exactly. Well, use the mind wipe on yourself that you have at this, okay, and then just watch them all over again.
Right. Oh, I get to experience it all over again.
For the first time again.
Well, I figure for the 100th anniversary episode, he'll probably come back, you know.
We can only hope. I mean, it seems like that those bridges are burned more than anything else. But I'm with you, Scott. Maybe there's hope someday.
Hey, Tom Baker came back for the 50th. Anything
Tom
can
came
happen.
Back. Exactly. Yep. And Tom, you know, before that, he came back to do some Big Finish. So,
right.
That is true. All right. So let's go ahead and start rating 1 out of 5 TARDISes, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. Scott, this was your decision. What's up?
I say 4. A really strong episode. And I think I give it a little bit more than I would have done originally, just because I now have it in context of what was that whole season.
Mm-hmm. Understandable. Mr. Mike.
I'm going to go ahead and give it a 4.5. I think there's enough content here that this ranks as one of the better episodes of New Who and the whole series, actually. It's one that people can relate to. It's one where the family of the companion really comes into play and is used to the best that they can. And like I said, the emotional punch to me is right up there with that classic Star Trek episode. And, you know, I think it's one that stands the test of time, so to speak.
I agree. I'm going to give it a 4.25. I'll go between the two of you guys.
Okay.
So we're not all agreeing. Ha ha. Yeah. No, I actually.
What a difference of opinion.
Exactly. I enjoyed it a lot. My two favorite scenes in this were when the doctor was running back to the TARDIS when he noticed things were starting to go wrong and he got to the police box. He opened it. It was empty.
Yes, that was great.
That was an awesome scene. That's actually, folks, what they actually take on to set when they go out into, you know, location. That's usually what they just do. And so it was awesome to see. And then the scene when they were trying to revive the TARDIS was awesome, with it starting to materialize and the key glowing.
Mm-hmm.
That was beautiful. It was just awesome. I would recommend somebody watching this. And, you know, for anyone who says the Ninth Doctor era, just pass over and just go right to the first 10 stories. Nuh-uh. There's some great classic things. Just skip World War III and you'll be great. So I definitely think, you know, you got some great things. But we definitely want to hear from you guys. You know, what did you guys think? ESWpodcast@gmail.com. All right, that's going to wrap up this week's episode. Let me thank, of course, Dr. Scott.
Thank you very much for having me.
Always great to be had, sir. And want to tell everyone about your little podcast?
Oh, sure. Dr. Geek's Laboratory of Applied Geekdom. You can find us on the ESO Network and on iTunes and on the web at drgeeklab.com.
That is awesome. And you guys are getting ready for your third season.
Yeah, we're getting ready for our third season. It's going to be awesome. We're actually going into space. A little spoiler there for you.
Awesome. I can't wait. Should be a lot of fun. And, of course, Mr. Mike.
And as always, it's my pleasure. And we should also mention that this week we get a double dose of Dr. Geek. So please check out the mothership, if you will, ESO podcast this week, because you can hear Dr. Geek talking about another thing that he loves almost as much as Doctor Who, and that's science.
Science.
That's right. Yeah. He'll be talking all about it. No, I don't have to say anything. Mike just said it all. So we'll see you guys next time here on the podcast. Take it easy and peace. And we're done.
Awesome.
You have been listening to Earth Station Who, a bi-weekly pop culture podcast dedicated to all things Doctor Who, featuring talents from across the universe. All topics on the show are the sole opinions of the individual and are used for entertainment value alone. You can subscribe to our podcast up on iTunes, Stitcher, or follow our blog at www.esopodcast.com. You can also follow us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. If you enjoyed the show, please leave feedback up on iTunes.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.